All right. You're listening to Green Left Radio, and we have our first interview on the line right now. Just to give him a bit of an introduction, we have Graham Matthews, who is a person of disability and has been an NDIS participant since 2017. Graham is also a member of Socialist Alliance, who has recently been part of developing policy for Socialist Alliance, which proposes an inclusive needs-driven national disability insurance scheme. And, of course, that is the outcome of that work is currently available to read on Green Left. Good morning, Graham.
G'day, Jacob. How are you going?
Well, good. Now, I guess to kind of start our discussion, maybe can you tell us, what some of the kind of urgent sort of issues has been that the federal Liberal government is attempting to kind of implement a number of kind of proposals for the NDS that are attempting in some ways have been criticised by activists as undermining the NDIS. So what can you kind of tell us about what the federal Liberal government is attempting to do?
Absolutely. The coalition government inherited NDIS. It was obviously set up by the Gillard government back in 2013. It was rolled out nationally beginning in 2016. And they've always been uncomfortable with it. The idea of giving money to people with disability as opposed to giving money to, you know, major mining corporations, large retailers or indeed large graziers is anathema to Liberal National Party philosophy. So they've always been extremely uncomfortable with it. They've been quite happy to swipe money from NDIS. In 2019, the Liberal government took something in the order of $10 billion from an underspend from NDIS, which they used to patch up shortfalls elsewhere in their budget and claim that they were headed towards a $7 billion surplus in 2020, which, of course, the pandemic upset that particular apple cart. But nevertheless, they were very happy to take money from NDIS and to use it as a cash cow before the program itself grew to maturity. But now that it's looking towards covering roughly 500,000 people with severe and permanent disability, by 2024, the government's now claiming that the scheme is unaffordable and needs to be trimmed back in order to make it sustainable in the long term. So they're looking to introduce a number of measures. We can talk about those, but which will fundamentally undermine the universality and the comprehensive nature of NDIS.
Well, maybe getting to kind of, another kind of question. I mean, yeah, we can definitely go into some of the specific details, but I guess, I mean, one of the things as well has been that in terms of this kind of rollback of the NDIS by the federal Liberal government, we've you yourself have actually also written kind of a lot of criticisms for Green Left, criticising the NDIS inherently in terms of its market-based service delivery model. And I guess, what can you tell us, about some of those kind of general issues and how they can, how they impact on people with disabilities?
In terms of the underpinning, philosophy of NDIS or its reason for being. It was brought in by the Gillard government, as I said, in 2013 with quite a lot of fanfare, the NDIS Act, the idea being that it would give people with disability greater choice and control over their supports. But underlying that has always been an attempt, as you say, to put disability funding on a market system. And in fact, cut costs. It's really, this is not about giving people with disability necessarily greater control or greater funding overall, but really attempting to use the market to cut costs for government. It has three fundamental problems. The first is that a marketised system where the mighty dollar, where profit really rules, tends to squeeze out community-based providers. So whether it be not-for-profits or indeed community-run services, we saw an example of that with just recently with a community-run non-profit organisation going to the wall under NDIS and unable to compete with some of the large for-profit enterprises. It's also what is euphemistically called by economists market failure, and this is particularly in regional remote areas where in many cases there is no choice for persons with disability. There is only one provider, and in certain cases there's absolutely no providers. So NDIS demands that the government step in those circumstances and actually ensure that people with disability are provided with the services that they need for a dignified life. And the third aspect to it is really the when the profit motive comes into play, then you have, in some cases, quite unscrupulous providers and owners of disability businesses attempting to drive down their costs in order to maximise their profit. And one of the easiest ways that they find to do this, obviously disability care in particular, is a very labour-intensive process. So the key way they attempt to do this is by driving down the cost of wages at the expense of the people who actually provide the care themselves, the disability workers, which is not only leading to the fact of disability being one of the lowest paid industries in Australia, it's also leading to a looming shortage of disability workers as people pursue other options rather than getting into disability work. Even aged care, which is notoriously poorly paid, generally speaking, there is greater security and better pay than there is for disability workers, and this is completely unacceptable.
And we have a bit of time to probably, before we go into, I guess, the kind of next question, I kind of wanted to, you alluded to this before, but what can you, I guess, tell us about some of these particular measures that the Liberal government is trying to introduce to the NDIS and why we should be opposed to them?
I suppose the key one, which there was quite a lot of press about in the last few months, is what Bruce Bonhage, who was the former, the inaugural head of the National Disability Insurance Agency, so the government body that runs the National Disability Insurance Scheme, described as robo-planning. This is the idea of bringing in so-called independent assessments where an applicant for NDIS or indeed a participant who's having their plan reviewed has to spend up to 3 hours with an allied health professional that they've never met before. So it could be like an occupational therapist, it could be a physiotherapist, it could even be a speech pathologist. They will ask them a series of yes or no questions and then get them to perform some fairly menial and one might say rather ridiculous tasks, like it's been described as peeling a vegetable or indeed taking out the bin. That allied health professional will then make a decision. It's not even a recommendation, it's a decision on how disabled this person is and what scale of funding they should receive from NDIS. Now, that's, as I said, been described as robo-planning. There was implacable opposition from the disability community and the support system and advocacy system. And thankfully, that was defeated for the moment. It was designed to save the federal government something in the order of $700 million over 4 years, but they have said they put that on the shelf for the moment. So they haven't said that they've totally withdrawn that. All they said is that they will put that aside for the moment. But many of us fear that should this government win re-election, then this will be back on the table again. And in fact, there'll be further attempts to cut, to bring in this kind of robo planning. There's also the Saturday paper did some research, and in fact the Nine newspapers as well, and the Liberal government, the federal government, particularly when it was under the minister was Stuart Robert, were looking at making changes to the NDIS Act, which, as I said, was brought in by the Gillard government in 2013, and particularly changing Section 34. Now, many participants of NDIS will be very aware of Section 34. It's the section of the Act that brings in the reasonable and necessary clause that states that every support received by a participant needs to be reasonable and necessary. Now, this has been used quite liberally by NDIS to actually restrict the scale of people's plans and even turn down quite necessary and reasonable applications on the basis that they're not value for money, which is one of the strictures included in Section 34. Nevertheless, the Liberal government wants to change the applicability of that. Under the current legislation, the federal court has found that should a participant be able to show that, in fact, what they need is reasonable and necessary for a dignified life, that NDIS must fund it, irregardless of the cost. Now, NDIS, the government, has not appreciated this, so they intend to manipulate Section 34. So rather than being applied to any particular support request, that it actually be applied, so reasonable and necessary, be applied to a participant's budget as a whole, which again is a looming cost-cutting measure, which could see everybody's plan cut significantly, and there'd be caps placed on how much funding participants may receive.
All right. Well, the next kind of question, and I think the most kind of important one, is you've pointed out all the kind of different particular issues, I guess, with the NDIS, but you've also pointed out all the issues that the federal Liberal government is kind of trying to implement to actually make it worse. And I guess you and several others were kind of part of developing the recent sort of adopted policy, I guess, for Socialist Alliance on the NDIS. And as part of developing this policy, it makes a kind of argument that the framework for disability care provision must be decided by people with disability themselves. And I guess, what does such a framework look like, and what are some of the practical measures that Socialist Alliance has adopted in terms of policy to actually address this question?
Thank you for asking that. I think it's a really key question. As any person with disability knows, this society is not structured to meet our needs. Every time we attempt to access the community, we're confronted by obstacles, whether it's something as banal as a hard curb, which we can't get down with our wheelchair, or indeed I'm a prosthetic user, so it's more difficult to traverse uneven ground, whether it's stairs with a ramp being either non-existent or hidden around corners or otherwise relatively inaccessible, whether it's simply the difficulty of accessing public transport and the petty humiliations that people with disability face on a daily basis in terms of accessing society. So our first key demand is that all buildings, all facilities be made 100% accessible, and this is a key demand. We argue that private for-profit organisations should not receive public funding. NDIS and indeed the funding for people with disabilities should not be about lining the pockets of private providers and creating so-called NDIS millionaires. We argue for a full democratisation of the governance of NDIS, or indeed of a disability funding service, and particularly that people with disability be included in the majority in that government. So we're calling for a board largely composed of people with disability and their families, which meets and actually sets policy for NDIS on an annual basis, and that be binding on the disability provider itself, and that eligibility not be restricted to a medical model, but actually be guided by self-assessment. So rather than, okay, well, you're only 3% disabled, according to this chart, therefore you don't get NDIS funding, whereas you're 5% disabled, so you do, which is an absurd system, an absurd and exceedingly discriminatory system, which we totally reject. We argue that assessment for services and equipment should be based on a person's self-assessment and needs, and oppose any attempt to categorise workers as domestic or otherwise, so that their wages can be cut. We also want to ensure that NDIS is equitable right across all states and, in fact, all areas. One of the points I raised earlier was the fact that for many of those living in remote and regional communities, there simply is no choice offered by NDIS. There is only one provider, if any. And in many cases, there is no provider at all. And we totally reject that and demand that the government plug those gaps and ensure that the same services and choice which are offered people lucky enough to live in the city, like myself, are offered to those who are living in remote and regional areas as well.
All right. Well, we're kind of running a bit out of time, Graham, but if you have any, you've given us like a really sort of fantastic kind of overview, and I guess if you have any kind of final comments you'd like to make, yeah, feel free to make them.
I think just the last two points I would make is that NDIS should be extended to those aged over 65. Currently, if you're under 60, if you're under 65, you can access NDIS and, in fact, remain covered by it once you age beyond 65. But if you're 65 and one day, you can't access NDIS. And, in fact, you can be stuck on the very limited state systems which will require co-payments. The second issue is that there should be no means testing. There is currently no means testing for NDIS, but it is the only state or federal funding welfare payment which is not means tested in some form. And we completely reject that people's income or indeed assets should be the basis of whether they receive NDIS funding or not.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Graham.
No, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity, Jacob. Okay.